All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we are here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Tuesday, August 30th. I am Doug Norrie. That is...
James Davis.
Nice. And we are here from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started for Major League Baseball DFS for FanDuel and DraftKings. Head over to the site for the next week or so. You can get a free 7-day trial to our projection system, which includes MLB, but more importantly, we think, includes NFL, along with our brand new player lab, which helps you do a bunch of different querying and filtering for really almost any filter for NFL you think would be important for creating cash or GBP games. Free for the next 7 days, which will take you, free for the next 10 days, which will take you through the first Sunday of NFL, and then $29.95 a month after that.
That's more importantly, by the way, come on, buddy. Let's hold on a second here, because isn't that like picking between children on some level? Like, you're going to go, more importantly, on our baseball podcast, all the baseball diehards, picturing their faces, Doug, in the chat room when they hear you say that, just feeling crestfallen, like you're going to ignore baseball, not take your normal big effort to make it perfect for everyone.
Well, considering this is a full Major League Baseball podcast, that's where the actions don't necessarily maybe line up with the words. We're going to talk football. We're going to talk baseball, buddy. But it's just saying
that. I think football again. Listen to you. It's like calling out a different lover's name.
Now would be the time to mention that right after this, we're recording a football podcast. So head on over and grab that. All right, let's get into a Tuesday of baseball. Well, actually, real quick, let's go back to last night quickly. Last night was one of those interesting nights where the pitching just didn't seem to... I was in the chat room for a bunch of time leading up to the lock yesterday. We have a chat room up on the site where people are always going up asking questions, which is mostly just having baseball conversation leading in really all day, but especially leading into those lock times for FanDuel and DraftKings. But I was kind of cautioning people. I said, you know, pitching just feels unsafe yesterday, either because of pricing, like Fernandez was really expensive, not in the best spot in the world, or pitchers with just total question marks. And I thought the system just did great. Like Musgrove was a guy the system loved, and people were really off of him, and you know, for that sort of recent performance piece. And he just went out there and just tore it up. The system was really on Bauer, which I was very really, really worried about. And he went 6 innings, 4 Ks, no runs. So I was a little backpatting in terms of grabbing some of those value pitchers that most of the industry was just basically off of.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, whenever we're going to think about, you know, being involved in, what do you call it, putting money on a game of skill, like we're doing with this, I think it's worthwhile to just really sit back and figure out where your edge comes from, right? It's like the old Amarillo Slim or Rounders quote, if you can't spot the sucker at the table, then you are the sucker, sort of thing. I think most DFS players, you know, one of the things I like to do to make sure I still have an edge is just look at a bunch of lineups and just make sure I find some bad ones. Because
right.
If I don't find any bad lineups, I think it's an information age for DFS. There's never been more information available than there is right now. And so in a lot of ways, information is not where we get our edge anymore. You know, like you can read good articles. Like we started this business originally 4 years, well, 3.5 years ago now, because specifically we just wanted to play and find good information online, and it wasn't there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now that information is there between our sites and our competitors, frankly, I think the edge comes as much from your own emotional regulation as it does from the information you deploy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, putting in more money when you have a bigger edge, you know, like some days it's going to be clear that the information is on your side and you can go bigger. I know, you know, one of our guys in the chat room, Tyler, the other day put in a big amount for him on double ups, wound up losing and wound up being able to keep a steady hand. I think that's really how one way you can make money. And another one is going to be not getting emotionally tied down when a guy you've picked has had a bad performance. It's something we've harped on, but I think this Musgrove case is a tremendous example of that. We already have a small sample size on him, but we know he has the K upside. We know he can do it. Had a couple tough starts, which is just going to happen. Could have stunk last night too, by the way. It's not, you know, can't pat ourselves on the back too much, but the peripherals are there, and at 7,000, it was ridiculously good play. So kudos to you and everyone else who was able to regulate emotionally there and get that edge.
And honestly, the way I operate too is he could have stunk last night, and depending on the way he stunk, I would have gone out and played him the next time out too. Do you know what I mean? There's one way to, there's two ways to stink. There's the way to stink where you just get BABIPed all over the place, which really, when I look back at his game logs, that had been the case for him. He had just been singled to death over those two games, and like 6 of his 8 hits or something like that were singles. And Yes, I know, you know, there's different kinds of singles, but in general, if it's mostly singles, that strikes me as, you know, bad would be bad luck. But so there's a way to be bad, like quote unquote bad like that. Then there's like the way to be bad when you're Danny Salazar, where it clearly appears as if something's wrong with you. And, and that just wasn't the case for me with Musgrove. So again,
sure. And Musgrove, you know, he has, again, he's a high variance pitcher, right? Like a low ground ball rate, you know, high K rate usually means you're putting balls up in the zone. Like he can run bad and give up a ton of home runs. He had some home run struggles in the minors as well. So, you know, it's not unusual territory for him to have a few blow up starts. It's what makes him, by the way, such a good value, right?
Right.
Because if he were just an ace's ace and came up and was, you know, vintage Mark Pryor or like Francisco Liriano or one of those guys, he would just be 9,500, you know,
right.
that would be no problem. But since he's not, since he's a tier below, instead we can get a great value on him. So,
and no walk rate, like he just doesn't walk anybody. So the ball, it's either a strikeout or ball in play, basically. Like his walk rate is under one or something like that from the season.
Now 1.6, but yeah, still true. I mean, still super, super, super low.
It went up because it was actually under one. He must have walked like two guys yesterday because he was under one. Yesterday. All right, let's get into today's games. So full slate of evening Tuesday baseball. I'm not feeling the same hesitancy I was feeling last night about pitching tonight. I think there are some clear-cut ways you can go with this that strike me as, you know, sort of on the safer side. When we're looking at pitcher tonight, who kind of jumps off the page to you to start?
I mean, I think for both safety and upside, Scherzer at the top of the list in terms of raw points in our system. Just seems like a tremendous play. I mean, Philly, I mean, you've mentioned they have a couple of decent left-handed bats, but they generally have been horrendous against lefties, righties this season. Second lowest WOBA in the league against them, healthy strikeout rate. You know, Scherzer is a guy that, you know, some people, again, have that emotional attachment to one way or the other, but I think he was tremendous last time out against Baltimore when we played him as well, so I don't see any reason not to play him in cash games for me.
The only thing that's really kind of throwing me off on Scherzer a little bit is he starts off as a -245. That's where it opens. And it's down to -210 now with all of the money coming in on the over and the Philly money line. And that just, like, so I have Philly at somewhere around 3.2-ish implied runs for today. That is about as high as I can remember for a Scherzer game. And, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. Even if I'm wrong, it's definitely trending on the high side for him, who's usually in that 3 range, I would say, or even lower. And he's also just coming off a great start. I know that doesn't matter, but it sometimes matters in the minds of bettors where that can sort of influence that line. So I'm just a little thrown off about why, like what Vegas or just what the public sees in why that line was mispriced to start with. And that's the only thing that's actually throwing me off a little bit with him.
Yeah, I think that's fair-ish, but I do think it's worth noting that just because a line moves doesn't mean it's not still great, right? Like if all we knew was that the opening line, I have it here as -207 and an 8 total, like that would still be great, right? So it's like, sure, things could be heading in the other direction, and maybe there was a little bit of inefficiency around the line, but yeah, I guess that doesn't scare me that much.
Well,
although
let me rephrase.
I agree that if it has to influence us one way or the other, it's clearly bad. Like we would always prefer that the sharp money come in on the side that we're on, but nah, I'm not too worried.
Let me rephrase. The thing that concerns me isn't even so much that the line moved, is that where it sits now is those 3.3 implied runs. That is just, even if that's where it opened, that would be about as high as you would ever see for Scherzer. That's what concerns me. So yes,
gotcha.
the line.
And you're kind of a scaredy cat in general. So
I remember
is
you said
fair?
That. So right now, Scherzer actually is not the top pitcher in our. Well, he's not the guy that's
not showing up in the optimal line.
No, he's not. I mean, I think some of that is price. Some of that, like I said, is that some of that implied runs are just higher than you would normally get for this price range, I think, and that's going to influence the system a
fair
little
enough.
Bit. I mean, Philly does stink, so I'm just not totally concerned with like the batter to batter matchup for him. But if I'm going off of Scherzer, who would you say is like sort of the next guy up? And it might be the guy who our system is showing, or maybe you disagree with that and want to go in a different direction.
No, I mean, well, I think there's two strong candidates here, and they kind of just do different things for you. So the guy our system is showing right now is actually Julio Teheran, and what it's picking up there is kind of a Joe Musgrove-esque bounce-back game that it pictures coming here. Now, the case for Teheran, I think, is a little bit shakier than the case for Musgrove was last night, mostly because in Teheran we have a guy now who has a solid month's worth of starts. that have been pretty shaky. But when you go on a game-by-game basis there, it actually paints, I think, a slightly different picture than just the fantasy point totals would suggest. So Tehran goes from a solid start against the Rockies on July 17th, where he puts up 36 fantasy points without even getting the win. And then he goes to Colorado. So he faces the exact same team 5 days later. And all of a sudden, he's a different guy for only four innings and gets bounced going into the fifth. Now, chances are good. I mean, that was only 60 pitches, too. I don't recall if that was an injury thing or not. So to bear with me or do your own research here,
I guess. Remember. Yeah.
But all of a sudden, now he's pitching. He goes to Philly, only makes it five innings, pitches Washington, good amount of strong lefties. And then he goes to Arizona, which is like Coors West? Which direction is Arizona from Colorado?
South?
All right, whatever. Coors South. Arizona's a good hitter's park, too, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So right. A couple bad starts in a row. Definitely not what you'd prefer. Obviously, you'd always prefer if a guy just keeps being good. But again, that's going to lead to some price inefficiencies. And then he's got the Padres, who, you know, you've mentioned several times, have added some bats throughout the year, but still rank last in the league in WOBA against right-handed pitching and tops in the league in strikeouts, or second, actually, now to the Brewers. But so a great matchup, a really low line. You know, again, for a pitcher in Tehran, it's kind of the opposite of what you were saying with Scherzer. The implied total for Tehran in the $7,800 price range on FanDuel is quite good. Strong line because they're up against Eddie Jackson. So there's a good case to be made for Tehran. People are going to listen to this and think, well, he's not safe. And I don't know that I can't. I don't know that I disagree with that statement, though. I think
the safety for him just comes in his price, right? So, you know, safety exists on a bunch of different spectrums, probably. And his is just that you're not paying a ton to get all the other incidental pieces that you would need to put together, like what you would consider to be a safe start. So, you know, good matchup, good park. His peripherals are okay-ish. And if you're getting him for less than $8,000 on FanDuel, that just gives you a ton of room to move when it comes to just filling out the rest of your bats. Like, for instance, on DraftKings, he's almost $10,000. And those numbers just don't really line up. Like, one of them is probably priced incorrectly, and I would just say it's probably FanDuel's side where he's just too low considering all the, you know, other pieces that he has to make up this start. Yeah, I think I'm with you on him.
One more thing that's probably worth noting, actually. I was looking at the game log, and I realized that I missed that he just went on the DL, so that's not good. So Tehran, we haven't projected that at six innings. He did pitch that his last time out, but if you think that the injury is still bothering him, like, you know, the peripherals on the surface look decent for last game, 4Ks, no walks, and then 11 hits, but, you know, the six runs, getting hit pretty hard, even in Arizona, could be a red flag. So for me, I don't think it's a cash game play, and that's – I'm going to put my foot down there, Doug. I just don't think
I'm not as worried about those things. I like to look at the pitch counts. He gets up to 107 pitches last game. I know he was a little bit worse. I'm not as scared. Injuries just don't scare me as much as they scare you, I think. Even though I'm like much more risk adverse than just about every other piece of our lives, I think. for some reason, the injury piece is just not something I probably don't worry about it enough, I don't think. All right, after him, what about Cueto? Cueto's another guy that's pretty high in our system. Can you make a case for him?
Yeah, I like Cueto. I mean, Cueto, we've talked about him. He's playing Cueto is kind of like kissing your sister, you know? It's like, that's an old gambling saying, too. So I don't actually kiss my sister. I don't even have a sister. Back to the podcast. Cueto. But it's just not exciting, I guess is what I'm saying. You know, you pay sort of sub-ace prices, and you get a guy. I mean, one thing Cueto does is he throws innings, right?
Right.
And most of our projection for him is coming on the fact that he's going to just be out there getting, you know, upper sixes, low sevens innings on average, and that's good. You know, you like a guy who can stay in the game a long time. Obviously, it helps him be more in line for the win. He's got the 14 wins this season. It's not totally a mistake, even though he's only got one since July 6th. Back then, he was priced much more aggressively, too. So he's not a guy that I'm going to look at. And like, unlike Scherzer, like, it's a case for me where our projection system has him fairly close today. And, you know, that's understandable. But maybe this is my own emotions talking. I feel like Scherzer is just a cut safer than him, almost for sure. I mean, the things that Cueto, if you want to make a case for Cueto, he does have the Diamondbacks, who have been a bottom 10 team against right-handed pitching this season. And that's accounts for their great home park, and they're going to San Francisco, which is one of the better pitchers' parks in the league. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for just playing Cueto, I guess, and feeling like it's safe. But man, I'm not excited about it.
Yeah, I think I'm a little. I like him a little bit more. This is my bi-weekly reminder that the Diamondbacks just are totally clueless when it comes to just putting a team together. They luck box out with Goldschmidt, just having him on the team, and then they just make every other wrong decision when it comes.
We're gonna talk about Michael Bourne again, dude.
I'm gonna avoid it. But this, they stack righty bats in all the wrong situations with guys that cannot hit righties. Like, they'll put Tomas and Castillo in the middle of the lineup. Those guys are like below replacement level almost when it comes to hitting righty pitching, and that's where the implied runs for them are really bad. They're just a really, really bad team that's gifted that park, like you said. And when they're moving to San Francisco, their implied run total is by far the lowest on the day. They're sub 3 right now. That's the thing that it's going to really drive Cueto for me in terms of like that safe, like trending toward that safe zone with him, just because it would take a lot for him to get blown up here. I think that's more of what I'm looking
at. I think
at.
That's fair. I think you can look at the game against the Mets at home a couple starts ago for a reasonable proxy of something you might want to expect. The 7 innings, 2 Ks, 1 run and a win. Like, you know, that's fine. You know, it's not going to kill you. Like, he's not going to be the guy you look at the end of the night and say, man, Cueto's terrible start really did me in. He's not going to score -5 points, but I do think, you might look at it and say, when everyone else plays Scherzer, who's got legit 60-point upside, and Cueto, I just don't think does. I think, I don't know.
No, I think you're right. He doesn't have that ultimate upper tier upside because the Ks just usually aren't there in like double digit bunches. Like, I know for most pitchers they don't get up to double digits, but he's just a total dog to ever hit that number. So I just see him as sort of like the Teheran thing. Like, the other pieces line up for him.
Scherzer does, by the way, 3 double digit Ks in his last 5 starts. One of those games with a course where he didn't get the case.
No, he's one of the few that has it. Like, there's only probably like 5 or 6 pitchers in the whole league.
You're saving $900 there. I don't know. It just seems like saving $900 on someone else.
On FanDuel, you're saving $900. On DraftKings, you're saving $2,400. So,
yeah, that's a much, much, much bigger difference.
Let's go over to DraftKings real quick. If we're trying to round out the starting pitcher too, because I'm not seeing too much else to get excited about here in terms of like FanDuel. A lot of these guys just have matchups that don't really excite me. I don't love Hamels in Texas against Seattle. Kyle Hendricks is a guy that I just always worry about with pitch counts and just what his ultimate what his ultimate line is going to be at the end. Wainwright just simply seems broken at this point. It's just something's going on with him. So a lot of these other, at least FanDuel pitchers, don't really jump out to me in terms of anything I really want to get too far behind, especially for cash games. But on FanDuel, on DraftKings, walk me through. Our system sees Josh Tomlin and at 5,200, and just says, "Oh man, if Josh Tomlin against the Twins, is this a misprice on him? Is there something up with him that we don't realize? Like, what? Because he's not a great pitcher by any means. He's just kind of a guy, but a guy on a good team at 5,200 on DraftKings, the system's going to be hard to get away from. What are your thoughts?"
Well, the question you're going to have to answer with Tomlin before putting him out there is, you know, can you excuse the fact that he's given up 6 runs or more in 4 of his last 5 starts? So, the first thing your eye goes to is the pitch counts, right? And you're like, hey, the pitch counts are down. Well, yeah, they're going to be down when you just give up 6 runs a start. Like, that's bad.
Right.
He's got a over 9 ERA in that time. It's anybody's guess, right? I mean, there's definitely some really, really bad matchups here. I mean, he's running the gauntlet, pitches at Yankee Stadium, at Washington, Boston, Toronto, at Texas. Like, that's not good, especially for a pitcher of Tomlin's skill set, where he's, you know, basically throwing batting practice and letting his defense do the work. Never walks anyone, so very susceptible to big innings when guys are just crushing the ball all over the place. The Twins are not that team. So, you know, he's so cheap that while I think maybe the 16-point projection there is a little aggressive, it's not out of bounds. And he's not going to need to do much more than that to warrant a pitcher 2 slot. So it's you're going to be holding your nose if you put Josh Tomlin in any lineup tonight. And, you know, if he gives up 5 earned runs in 3 innings, you're going to be kicking yourself. But this is actually a case where I can see just leaving that last 5 or so starts behind me and picturing the guy who he was before that, who was frequently going 7 innings and just being fine. So.
Well, a couple of just notes from his last couple starts. The game against Toronto, where he allowed 6 earned runs, it looks like he got BABIPed pretty bad. Like, he was actually striking guys out. He struck out 5 through 4 innings, and the BABIP crushed him. So did the home runs. He allowed 3 home runs, so that's definitely an issue. And then the game against Texas, he led the walks and the hits, but then he had a 0 left on base percentage. So just every guy that got on scored against him.
Yeah.
that is doesn't stand the reason that that will be like that for the rest of his career. I mean, but he would be the worst pitcher probably in the history of baseball if that happened. So those are just a couple numbers that stand out to me that he could have been running bad. Obviously, he has let up those 5 home runs in 2 games. That is no bueno. So I think I'm probably going to grin and bear it on the Tomlin thing at 5,200, but I'm definitely not going to feel good about it.
Yeah, no, I think that worth when you dig through his pitcher profile a little bit more aggressively, you can see there are some weird things here. I mean, the home run to fly ball rate, it's always going to be high on a guy like Tomlin, right? Doesn't walk many guys, leaves a lot of fly balls up in the zone anyway. So his kind of true home run to fly ball rate for his career has been about 14%, which is a lot. But 20% this year, you know, that's, you know, basically he's giving up 50% more home runs than he should be. So already, and a guy who's already giving up a lot of home runs, that's going to make a big difference. On the same token, he actually can piece together a good start, specifically because of his high fly ball rate. He has a historically very, very low BABIP of 276. 277 this year is, you know, right on track to what you can expect. And generally, guys who leave balls up in the zone will also have a lower threshold for big innings because, I mean, well, I should rephrase that. There's going to be more variability. Like, guys with high BABIPs allowed will tend to give up a lot more of those seeing eye single, kind of like 6 hits, 4 runs innings, where Tomlin, it's going to be more like a single and a home run. But since he doesn't walk anyone, those home runs are greatly mitigated, or the downside of those home runs are greatly mitigated. So I think it's, you know, we already said this 1,000 times. You're not going to be excited, but very, very strong case for him just being like, I think it's actually pretty high floor, all things considered, looking at those last 6 starts or whatever, that he's a lot higher floor than you might think based on what you're seeing there.
And I just did a DraftKings optimal lineup and had Wainwright in there at 7,000. And that was just another one where I'm like, ooh, oh no. he's just a guy.
That could just be an innings thing with him too. Like, his innings have been way down. So
yeah, I'll look at that after we get off. Let's get on before we don't run out of time here. Let's talk about some of the offense on the offensive side of things. We have the game in Coors. That game yesterday between Gray and Maeda got really bet down, toward the thing. It started at something like 11, was down to 10 over under by the time, and I don't think it crept any lower than that, but really everyone hammered the under in that game. I don't know if that's going to be the case again today. They open at, I think, 11 with obviously much worse, 10.5 worse pitchers going on the mound today. Is this where you start, you think, with cash games in Coors? Or again, you know, system got away from it last night pretty correctly. Do you think we get away from it again today?
No, I think that you can play in Coors today. I think that it's not, I mean, Rich Hill is kind of an interesting guy. Fangraphs just did a profile on him about how he throws his curveball more than just about anyone else in the major leagues and up there in the major league history department. So kind of interesting. He's had such a huge, huge resurgence this season. One thing to note about Coors, though, is that historically curveball pitchers have done horrendously in Coors, right? Because whatever the lack of humidity makes the ball spin less, so the story goes. But curveball pitchers have always just done really, really, really badly there. So if that curveball flattens out, you're left with a guy with, you know, kind of a regular fastball that's mostly good because it's set up by his devastating curve. So I could definitely see that game sort of, you know, hitting that total. You know, neither the Dodgers nor the Rockies really want to be facing a lefty. So it's a low-ish total for Coors. So if you have to pay Coors premium prices, it might not wind up being worth it. To that effect, I think that you can kind of turn your attention in a few other directions and do pretty well for yourself. Like, you know, I'm thinking about the Blue Jays Orioles game that has nearly the same over at 10 and considerably more to get excited about on a price basis. Like, for instance, the Blue Jays facing Ubaldo Jimenez. Likewise, the Tigers facing Anthony Renuato. I'm going to call him now an official X prospect. That game also has a total of 10. So I think there's like other stuff you can do. You don't need to pay up for the premium on prices, but you know, I don't mind playing the Coors guys or anything.
This is almost the exact same situation we were in last night with just these exact same teams where the Dodgers and the Rockies get like that 15-20% price increase over what they probably should be priced at considering they're just talent level. Where the, you know, Tigers and Blue Jays just simply don't get that. And they have better, you know, the same implied run totals or better. And, you know, the Tigers have, you know, they're at 6 right now. And neither of the teams in Coors is at 6. And the Blue Jays are kind of the same way, but they haven't been priced out of contention. And they're just simply better teams, right? So, like, it makes sense that their implied run totals are higher because the teams just up and down the lineup are better. And you get that artificial boost from Coors, but that doesn't doesn't tell the whole story. The Dodgers.
Right. I can't hit a home run in Coors.
What's that?
You know? So like, I said, I can't hit a home run in Coors. So it's not like, you know, it doesn't change. It doesn't turn everyone into, you know, steroid era Sammy Sosa or anything like that.
Right.
So you don't just like jam Coors guys and hope for the best.
And I don't think that will be the case too. I think this is another thing that people are sort of getting wise about. Just in general, you talked about the information, just the overall information we have now is just much, much better across the industry, where even a casual fan can kind of suss this out just from a number of different sources or projection systems. And that was the case last night. I think there was times where you would have seen people jamming more Coors bats in there simply because it's Coors. People are starting to get wise to that. It wasn't the case last night. The Tigers and Blue Jays guys were more of the chalk plays across the board than anyone in Coors. Mm-hmm. So I think you see a lot of the same thing tonight, just because Anderson and Hill, while not, you know, Cy Young Award winners or anything, are fine. They're just fine-ish pitchers that have certain things they do pretty well, and that is just enough to probably drive down the expectation for both teams across the board. I love the Blue Jays and Tigers today. I think you're going to see a lot of those guys in the system. If you are off of those teams, is there...
Side note, I just want to side note on Anthony Romano for a second.
Yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce his name, so apologies, Anthony's family, if you're listening right now. But
yeah.
I couldn't believe... I made a joke last time on the podcast that his 9 ERA didn't seem sustainable, even though he was really bad.
Uh-huh.
Just went out there, five and a third, six earned runs last time. Clockwork against Seattle. So we liked the stack last time. I think we've liked the stack basically every time against him. And I think, I mean... He faced Detroit actually on May 7th, and I think he came in extended relief and they crushed him too. So it's just a fantastic spot. Love it.
I think most of the guys you're going to see from at least the cash, you know, typically our cash game optimal lineups are usually go around a certain theme, and that theme is teams that expect to score a lot of runs with, you know, a value bat in here. If the guy gets pushed up to the top of the lineup for whatever reason and he's kind of new or the sites haven't adjusted, like, you know, like last night that was a Brock Holt hits leadoff for the Red Sox. He's clearly not priced like the guy who's going to be hitting leadoff for the Red Sox over the course of the season, and you get a nice little value on him. Jared Dyson's kind of fallen into that category lately. We're hitting leadoff for the Royals. So outside of guys like that, I think for the most part, you're going to see most of our lineups filled with Detroit guys, Toronto guys, probably some Cubs. They have another nice implied run. And then the Indians, too. Indians are coming almost six runs tonight. And they're just another one of those teams that runs pretty deep down the lineup. So their run lines do trend higher, but some of their prices have come down a little bit. Like Lindor is down to $3,400 on FanDuel. Yep. I think it's a really, really nice price for him. Depending on if they get Kipnis up at the back up at the top of the lineup, he hit second yesterday. They've been sort of like fluctuating with what they do with the leadoff spot. I know they hit Davis leadoff against lefties. Sometimes they'll hit Carlos Santana there, which I really like if you can get him in that spot. Just getting bumped three positions up in the batting order. So they're a lineup that I'm going to want to see come out, but I really like some of the value you're getting out of the Indians.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of really interesting one-offs. You know, it's actually, frankly, just looks like a really good day. Like, I'm looking at these lineups, even when you do plug in, you can plug Scherzer in, you can plug Cueto in at the pitcher slot, and you're just getting great names, great values, getting a lot of Detroit, Toronto, getting Chris Bryant, Lindor, like you mentioned, Neil Walker. By the way, a side note about Neil Walker, which is I found pretty heartbreaking. I was back in Jersey when we were visiting you,
yeah.
And the advertisement on The Fan came out, or no, it was ESPN Radio, and they were like, Neil Walker and the Mets take on. I was like, Neil Walker and the Mets? This is what my poor Mets have become.
Yeah, I don't think you need to worry about him too much tonight, though, because, yeah, he sat out a couple games here at the back issue. If he were to come back, I think I'm
going to insult to injury, Doug.
What's that?
I wanted to recommend a single Met on this podcast. I've never done it. And now I can't.
By the way, FanDuel still hasn't corrected some prices. Like, this is where being slow to correct on prices just is something you need to continually take advantage of. Jose Bautista is still hitting leadoff for the Blue Jays. He's at $3,800. That's just a total misprice on him. And you just have to just take advantage of these things. Like DraftKings has sort of come around on where he is, but even though, you know, he's up to $4,900 over there, but $3,800 for a guy with his skill set and just hitting leadoff for one of the top offenses in the league. I mean, why wouldn't this guy be 100% start? I'm just not totally sure.
Sure. Can we go basic math on this for a second? Because I think a lot of times, you know, it's something people sort of intuit, you know, that batting higher in the lineup is good, but they'll look at a guy like Bautista and be like, it's going to lose some of his RBI opportunities. Like, I've definitely heard things like that in the chat.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, though, like, yeah, maybe. I mean, it doesn't matter nearly as much in the AL, but also like five plate appearances is just more than four, right? And sure, like the Blue Jays, he would get five plate appearances from time to time in the cleanup spot or fifth or whatever. But the last five games, gotten five plate appearances or more in each of those games. And now instead of the occasional five plate appearance game, he's getting the occasional six plate appearance game.
Right.
And that's just so many more. Like, he doesn't need to do too much extra with that extra plate appearance to just be a phenomenal play. So just like clockwork. It's not even really having good games, just churning out these 18 fantasy point performances. I think he's due actually probably for, not due in the due sense, but he could definitely have one of those explosive games that just vaults him, you know, 10% or 20% in price.
It's simply the most important thing when I think in projecting a player is this, that opportunity, right? It's like the thing that I think a lot of people are really slow to come around on. Also, it's getting there now, but just slow to come around to like what kind of opportunity it means to hit first as opposed to fifth. Like sometimes people will say, oh, Adam Jones or Mark, I know this is a different team, but Adam Jones or Mark Trumbo, how can we like Jones more? Because he hits four spots higher in the lineup, right? I mean, like if those two guys swapped positions, the system would like Trumbo more, right? It's just a simple math game where if all things being equal, and let's say, let's just call those guys like relatively similar players, right? Same team, you know, pretty much the same profile-ish. I know they're not the exact same guy, but when you just get that four spots, you know, half of a batting order higher in the lineup, it's just an incredible advantage. And that's just really the whole, that and basically kind of like what team you're on in terms of like how often the other guys in your lineup can just get back to you in terms, and a good way to look at that is implied runs, right? Well, so if you're just going to score more runs, you're just going to get more opportunity. Like, so sometimes people will say, oh, how come you like this guy more than Freddie Freeman? Chris Davis more than Freddie Freeman. Well, Davis is on a team that's just way better, right? And they're just going to score more runs. And yeah, if they switch teams, the system will like Freddie Freeman better. You know, this is like the simple math that I just not sure everyone's totally understanding.
Yeah, I mean, and just to point out the simple math, it's just that the first place in the order tends to get about 10%, almost exactly 10% more plate appearances than the fifth slot in the order. And 10% is a ton. You know, when guys are only scoring 10 fantasy points a game, that means 11 fantasy points a game. Like, that's just a lot.
Are you like a human calculator, dude?
If you're going to score 100 fantasy points in a game, it's the difference between 100 and 110. I know people know what 10% is, but...
Do you do that in your head?
I think people like to discount those small edges, you know? I think that people like to look at stuff and say, meh, and I was kind of doing this with the pitchers, right? It's like, meh, it's just a small percent, but if you do that for your whole lineup, you just lose.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that, so it's just, and we talk about these things because this is how we have created our system, and I trust it when it comes to decisions like this. And I just think it has the right inputs when we're trying to factor in all these things. And those things, batting order, team implied runs, they just really, really do matter. I think we're just to circle back around some of the bats, those are some of the teams we're looking at again. Detroit, Blue Jays. I think we can maybe avoid Colorado today in anything but GVPs, just because I don't know if the implied runs are high enough for the way they're priced. And you can just kind of have it, the lineups are going to look very similar to yesterday, and I think that's correct.
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
All right, that is it for us today. We are dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Go to DFSR.com/lab, L-A-B, to get a free 10-day trial to our projection system for now, NFL and MLB. They're overlapping until they're going to overlap for subscribers from now till infinity, until baseball season ends. But you can grab that free trial where you'll get both leading up to the first week of NFL, and you'll also get access to our brand new custom awesome featured player lab that really allows you to do all the filtering you'd ever want to do to put together lineups for NFL. We're really, really excited about what our friends at Lineup Lab have made there. It's about as good as it gets in the industry, and we just want you to be able to check it out for free for 10 days. All right, buddy.
Yeah, and point of clarification, they will overlap. You can access the tools from now until infinity if we maintain a business for that long. But if it's year 2035, or like 2335, just don't reach out to my heirs if you can't access the player lab. That's, you know,
I'm really, no really, really glad you made that distinction. That was pretty important. That was
just a legal disclaimer. I'm more on like the business side of things a lot of times with DFSR, so I just want to make sure you don't get us any legal hot water.
Interesting. That's what you call it, huh? All right. We are going off to do an NFL pod. You can go over and subscribe to both the MLB pod and the NFL one if you head over to iTunes. We're going to do the NFL one now, buddy. I'll talk to you again tomorrow to do some baseball.
Can't wait.